No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People the Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will try to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the nation's capital, America's last colony. Along with my co-host, Maria Sanchez, we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the discussion by calling in at 888-627-6008, or you can Skype questions to BBSRADIOPR. Tonight we're going to have a special guest, and we're going to talk about statehood, our favorite subject. But first, let me introduce my colleague and co-host and say hello. Maria, are you there?
I am here, Michael, and I just like to share that my semester concluded this week.
I saw a break.
Oh, yes, you did. And I took 16 units and I got straight A's. So I guess I'm doing the right thing.
You are way too smart to be dealing with me. 16 credits and straight A's. That's just amazing.
They say no one ever asks you your GPA when you get your PhD. And it's like, yeah, but my ego cares. And I have to tell you, I do think I learn more because I pay attention to so many details to make sure that I have enough research to back up what it is that I'm writing or presenting or, you know, that sort of thing. So I do think there is a correlation for me personally between knowledge and grades.
Oh, absolutely. You know, Mrs. Brown was a straight A student, and she was a valedictorian of her high school, a straight A student, straight A's in graduate school when she got her master's degree. And you know, she's way smarter than I am. And, you know, I was the guy with the cliff notes, you know, at the end of the, you know, I was, you know, one of my favorite lines from a movie is when the history teacher asked somebody in high school, who was Joan of Arc? And the kid says, Noah's wife. That was me. You know, I thought Joan of Arc was Noah's wife at first. So,
you don't fool any of us with your self-deprecating humor.
Oh, come on.
We know that you're a rocket scientist, so you stop.
Well, you know, only because you make me look that way. Tonight, we're going to talk about statehood. But first, we have to say a word about the passing of John McCain. And we're not going to belabor this much because so many people are talking about it because he was such an amazing man. I've got to tell you that I didn't agree with him very often. I actually talked to him face to face about statehood. He told me he wasn't interested. He told me that, DC, in his opinion, D.C. shouldn't be a state. So he really wasn't on our side. But what an amazing American. Not only a war hero, but so much service to his country as a member of the House of Representatives, as a member of the United States Senate. And the thing that we're going to miss most about him in Washington, D.C., in my opinion, is that he could be bipartisan. You know, he could rise above the rancor and vote his conscience. He was always a man of conscience. He was a great American. And my heart goes out to his wife, Cindy, and their many children I know he has several children, and his family and friends have my deepest condolences. He was a great, great man, and we're really, really going to miss him.
And I just was tearing up as you were saying all those things because I actually did vote for him. But he really came on my radar after his autobiography was published, which was about the late 90s. And to learn firsthand from him about what he had experienced, I, from that point on, I was just like, yep. And then when he started to make Republicans angry at him, I was like, yep, that's who he is. He's just, you know, he's his own guy.
He was a fighter. And you know what? 5.5 years in a prison camp.
That's, I was just going to mention that, with two broken arms and a broken leg that they didn't treat.
Yeah.
And that they punished and tortured him for hours every day. Do you know, I read an account.
And then they were going to let him go. And he said, no.
No,
he
yeah.
said,
but
I won't go unless you let everybody.
Yeah. But they said that he initially he thought the only way out was to commit suicide. And he was preparing to do so. And one of the guards caught him with a piece of cloth attempting to set it up. And he's because he said, I had lost all hope, which I don't know how you couldn't. I mean, Nelson Mandela is, you know, times what, 5? But I don't know. I mean, just think about it. Day after day, hour after hour, minute after minute.
Broken legs and broken arms. And they come to you and they say, look, we'll let you go. And you say no. I mean, I think that if there's something more courageous than that, I've never heard of it. The man was just a hero. And unfortunately, we got to move on to statehood. But you know, because we could talk about him all night.
Yeah.
He's just a wonderful, wonderful man, and we'll miss him in D.C. But let's bring on our guest, Anise Jenkins. Are you there, Anise?
I'm here. Hi. How are you doing, Senator Brown, and your wonderful co-host?
Hi. Good afternoon. Hi. Good evening to you.
Thanks.
Nice to have you visit with us again, Anise.
Yeah.
And you are really inspirational. I'm following you via Facebook at all of what you do. And I'd love you to share with the listeners, if they haven't heard what you're up to, it would be really great. Because talk about, as Michael says at the beginning, grassroots and activism.
Yeah.
That's the embodiment of who you are.
Yes, we are grassroots. We started in 1997. It's really amazing that we are still continuing this fight. When I got involved in the organization Stand Up for Democracy in D.C., Free D.C. was founded, I just thought, you know, we're going to hit this thing and then we're going to tell the truth and people are going to just jump into it and it's going to happen, you know.
Yeah.
And it doesn't work that way. It does not work that way.
That must be so frustrating.
That's okay. It is frustrating, but you when you do some history and do some research, you realize that it took Hawaii 50 years. It took other states a long time to become a state, and it's not that unusual, you know.
It's funny that you say that, Anise, because we've got somebody here filming us right now, and we just had an interview, and he asked the same question, and I said the same thing to him, that it took 70 years for New Mexico. It's a long path, but if the movement that we have has a soul, it's Anise Jenkins. Anise Jenkins has always been the voice of reason. She's never wavered from her devotion to the idea that districts should become a state, you know, and people are out there saying many different things. Let's get a single vote. Let's get budget autonomy.
Right.
Let's get some of these other things. But Anise has always said statehood, statehood, statehood. And while we're on the subject, I just want to say to Maria, you know, California, we have 32 co-sponsors in California of our statehood bill. And you asked me last week, Maria, you said, who's in number 2 spot? And I told you New York. And you asked me how many New York had, and I didn't know. Well, New York has 15.
Oh, my goodness.
California,
more than double.
Oh, my God. We ought to have a California day here.
Yeah, I think so.
We should all eat avocados for a day, or you know, or listen to the Beach Boys,
or do yoga,
do something to pay tribute to the people of California for being so supportive. So thanks. Not to mention, both of your senators are co-sponsors of the bill.
Well, yes. So that just shows you what an iconoclastic state I live in, that there's a lot of diversity here, which I'm really proud of. And we're going to be one of the first, I think the first, to outlaw the use of straws because of all of that that's contributing to the plastic in the world and the oceans and stuff. And we do a lot of things that people, it's like, wow, they're really quirky out there. And then it becomes what they say, what happens in California blows east.
Right. Well, you're ahead of the curve, no doubt. and hopefully you'll lead the way when it comes to statehood. So, Anise, the good news is we have 195 co-sponsors on our bill.
Which is the most ever, right?
Most ever.
Yeah.
By a long shot. But they're all Democrats, and that's the bad news. Yeah. We're still trying to get Republicans. So do you think we're getting closer, Anise? What are you saying?
Oh, we're definitely getting closer. We're exceeding all previous records for co-sponsors. We've never even been that close. And it's happening because of the grassroots. People are going up there on the Hill on their own. They're going in groups on the Hill. And finally, we have our own local government that backs statehood, which is nice. You know, we have the delegate, Eleanor Holmes Norton, who's supporting statehood. I mean, we don't have a lot of opposition within D.C., which I think we did have at one time. So that makes a big difference. You know, people are being educated and exciting. Yeah, they're being excited about the prospect of becoming the 51st state.
The one thing, my takeaway, though, sorry, Michael and Anise, in these conversations that we've been having in the past couple of years that I've been affiliated with Shadow Politics, is that there seems to have been a fair amount of apathy. And do you see that that is changing course and that people are getting more engaged and more active?
I would definitely say... Oh, you go ahead, Senator Brown. I would say yes.
Go ahead.
It is changing. It is changing. People are. It's part of it is education. Just knowing that this can be done. This is a possibility, you know. And people are getting out and talking about it. We had the referendum. I think that helped quite a bit to get people to go to the polls and vote 86% for statehood at our local poll. So those things make a difference.
Yes, they do. And you know, that's one of the reasons we need to put some more resources behind this, because we are starting to get momentum and we need to build on that momentum. We need to take advantage of it. And now's really, in my opinion, the time that we need to push so that when the environment is right, and by that I mean when Democrats control the House and Senate, because Democrats are really behind pushing this, we can get our legislation through and hopefully get it signed into law. I think now is the time to push. And I'm going to use this moment to digress a second and say that we have started a nonprofit organization called Statehood No Other Way Foundation, and we're going to have our first big inaugural fundraiser at Arena Stage. They're going to do a play is being done called Turn Me Loose. It's on the life of Dick Gregory. And on what Dick Gregory's 86th birthday would have been, we're going to throw a celebration at Arena Stage. And we are going to, we bought out the orchestra section. We're going to have a little party afterwards. And I hope people will come. I hope people will support the foundation.
When is it?
It's October 12th. That was Dick's birthday. His family's involved. It's going to be a great event. And you can go to our website, statehoodnow.org, and get tickets. So please do that. But now...
Wait, Michael. How do you disperse the funds? So that money that you raise, which is the profit that goes to the foundation, then how does that get spent?
Well, first we got to see how much money we make, but the way it gets spent is two basic ways. One, to support our website, Teach Democracy, which is a resource for teachers to use DC statehood as an example of a civil rights struggle in their civil rights curriculum. And we've tied these the fight for DC statehood to every standard that the teachers have to teach to. So it's a really good tool for them. And it really helps us to get the word out through an established system of schools all over the country. You know, we don't have to go state by state by state. There's schools everywhere. And if we can get high school teachers to use this, then it helps get the word out. So that's one place the money goes. And the other place is for this radio show, to help expand the audience and help this radio show. It's paid in part by the government. When it was started, it was paid exclusively by me. But we want to do some more things with it. And money from the foundation would certainly support that. So, but this isn't a big money-making thing, to be honest with you. It's not about the money so much as it is about introducing our foundation to the people of Washington.
So it's an awareness raising.
Yeah, more than anything. And you know what? We didn't want to have just another dinner where right. we all talked around, sat around and talked about how great we are. We wanted to have something, give something to people. So this is a great performance. The New York Times has already called this play, scorchingly funny and brilliant, takes your breath away. That was the comment from the New York Times. So it's a great play. Tickets are regularly $80, and we're selling them for $100, which includes the birthday party afterwards. So it's a good deal. You get something out of it. We get something out of it. And we raise the awareness about statehood. And that's
will you be
about.
Able to say something from the stage about it or afterwards?
Yes. Yeah, we're going to have a reception.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because this play is already ongoing, and you've taken aside seats for that evening. Is that correct?
We brought out the whole orchestra section.
Okay.
Much. And you know what? We're talking about the website. Anise Jenkins and I are both going to Chicago, right? You're going to Chicago?
Absolutely.
Anise,
yes, we're going.
Right.
We're we both are going to. Yes, we're going.
Go ahead.
I'm going. I'm going. We're going to the National Conference of Social Studies, and that is related to education. I would just like to say we celebrated, Stand Up for Democracy celebrated its 20th anniversary last year, and we are not in competition with Senator Brown. We work together,
no. But
we are a nonprofit also, and
yes.
It would be fabulous, really fabulous, to fund these organizations.
Yes.
I mean, it's a lot of work. It's a lot of time that's needed to be spent in pursuing this goal, and it can't be done without being funded. That's not going to happen.
Well,
so our website is freedc.org.
Right. That's exactly right. Say it again, because I interrupted you.
Mm-hmm.
What's your website?
Freedc, freedc.org, O-R-G.
Nice.
And you know what? If you've never been to freedc.org, you need to go there. It's a great website. I just looked at it the other day, in fact, Anise, and it's a great website. You guys are doing a great job. Look, we have a caller.
Yes.
Who's
great.
Taboo, who's a regular listener of the show. Taboo, what's up?
Well, hi, guys. First, let me thank all of you for your great work, all of you. And congratulations, Maria, on that PhD.
It's coming. It's a work in progress. I'm over halfway through. Thank you.
Okay. Oh, well, congratulations, I should say, on the A's. Yeah. Okay. But, Senator Brown, you mentioned that the statehood bill now has more co-signers than ever, right? Is that what you said?
Yep. Yes, more than ever.
Okay, I want to make a statement, then I got a question for you, if you don't mind.
Yeah, absolutely.
We know the history of this country and how it has treated certain people at various times. For example, let's say people with darker skin or more pigmentation in the skin, and their supervisors, and then not have had equal justice under law. So
yes. My
question to you is, now that we have a larger population of quote-unquote white people in the city, do you think that this might have anything to do with the more co-signers of the bill now?
Well, I hate to think that that's true, but it probably is, Taboo. You know that the first delegate to the District of Columbia, Walter Fauntroy, used to say, and correct me if I'm wrong here, Anise, that we had the four twos. We were too urban, too liberal, too democratic, and too black to be,
yes,
you know, and those were the
that.
Things, those were the things that worked against us. And we also know that there really is no state with a majority population that wasn't white that's actually come and become a state. New Mexico is the perfect example. They waited for 70 years, and then when the majority population became white, they became a state. So it is a factor. I don't know that it's the only factor or the major factor with D.C., because D.C. was not predominantly African-American until the 1960s. So that really doesn't explain the first 150 years of our disenfranchisement. So it's more than just that, but that is certainly a factor.
As an African-American woman, I would like to comment on that question, too.
Yeah, please.
I think it definitely has an impact. And the original opposers of statehood were definitely from the South. We had Lodge Faircloth from North Carolina. Most of the people in Congress now who are against D.C. getting just basic rights are from the South or from the Southwest. That's undeniable. Utah, and then we have most of them are from the South. And I believe there is racism behind it. The fact that we have many more co-sponsors has to do with the fact that a lot of our statehood groups now are spearheaded by whites. And gentrification of the statehood movement, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, Anise has been involved in this so much longer and goes back to people like Lodge Faircloth. But that's really the irony of our situation, too, is that a lot of times the people that controlled the District of Columbia in Congress through a committee that used to be there used to be a district committee. There is no more. But those people were from the South. They were people that didn't like us that were on that committee, or they were our neighbors. There were people from Maryland and Virginia. Imagine having your neighbor be able to tell you what you can do. It was just a horrendous situation, and that all.
Well, it still is. Well, it
that's
still
right.
is horrendous.
That's exactly
it's
right.
Just like
that's changed.
That those things
right,
have changed,
and our neighbors, and that's why, and I think.
Yeah.
I was saying, I think the problem still exists. We really need to look at each other. I tend to believe some of the same problems that we had during the Revolutionary War, we have right now. When we had the Tories, you know, we had the people who did not have American interests at heart. I think we have that now. Now, Maria, you mentioned shadow politics a little while ago, I think.
Yes.
Do we have a shadow government? These are the questions we need to ask. Who is it that's controlling us? Keep in mind that we are in the South, you know, here in D.C. You know, D.C., the capital came here because it is in the South. You know, a deal was made. You know, a lot of deals are being made behind the scenes. That's why Donald Trump, if we bring it up to date, Donald Trump was elected because people want the corruption and the corrective actions to be put into place. So I think it
is
sometimes
Donald
will
Trump
be good.
Statehood taboo.
No.
About statehood. Well, this is the key. Who
but
is
he,
it wait, that,
didn't you tell us, Michael? Sorry, taboo. That he has a license plate cover that says something about D.C. statehood.
I don't know if he does, if he uses
you
our
mentioned
taxation.
I think he put it on. He wears a plate.
He may have questioned about statehood, and he said no.
Yeah.
Well, let's begin to, if we can, I don't know if you all want to go into this, but let's look at some of the terrible things that has been happening from government, okay? Because this is government that does not give us statehood here. The federal government does not give us statehood, Okay. Now let's look at, well, I was talking earlier about how certain people were not treated fairly. There was no equal justice under law for certain people of color. We don't have equal justice under law here in D.C. So it's about law. And it is wrong. Okay. Now let's look at who in government. Now, the reason for this is because I want to focus on solving the problem, the solution. So before we can solve the problem, we have to first identify it. So let's look in the government. Let's look what's going on. And I mentioned Trump, and let's look at some of the things that has been going on all along. Let's look, for example, of that some people that I mentioned who are dark-skinned. Look how we've been treated. You take, for example, a program from the government, like COINTELPRO, okay, a program by the FBI. Okay, now, not to mention names and everybody, you know, I don't want to make it personal. I want to look at policy and the problem. No, the FBI, and not all people working for the FBI, don't get me wrong, but it's the corrupt part of the FBI and other parts of the government. COINTELPRO is one example, and there are many others that we could talk about. Now, this went on for years.
Finally, I saw recently a documentary on COINTELPRO. They attack Native Americans. They attack black people. They attack Hispanics. They attacked anybody who wanted to change the system.
I'm just saying, that's the problem.
You know, the fact that it was wrong. Taboo, we don't want to cut
you
off here, but there's no doubt that racism plays a role in many, many government institutions and what happens in many instances. But, you know, and it has played a partial role in the statehood movement. But really, we need to move on and talk about what's going on.
Well, look, can I say one thing before I go on this? Because I want to deal with the solution. I just want to point out that since President Trump has been in office, 25 people that I think I know about, I could be wrong, it looks like at least 25 people have been fired. And I don't think that has ever happened before. And all the corruptness and all of that, and we talk about these problems. Does that have anything to do with an increase in them? I don't know. But I just want to say, let's solve the problems. And I think racism, the skin color, might just be one of the things that keep us divided. The real problem are the people in the shadow government.
Well, and you know what, Taboo, I can't let you go without saying, without commenting, that he's fired 25, three times as many people have left on their own. I mean, it's not just
Say that again. What was the last 525 and what?
Three times as many people have quit. They've quit because they don't want to work for this man. So it's not just, you know, him firing people and cleaning house and draining the swamp. It's that people are leaving in droves because, you know.
A lot of it was because a lot of them had a lot to hide and they know they had to go. And this is what cleaning the swamp is all about. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Goodbye, Taboo, as always.
Bye, Taboo. We love you.
So my understanding is that President Trump's limousine does have taxation without representation on it.
And that's great because, you know, a lot of people, we had to, now we love President Obama, but we had to fight with him to get those tags on.
My understanding is that he didn't put them on until he was entering his second term, and President Clinton put them on right as his term was ending.
Right.
So for Trump to start with it, it's kind of a little nod.
Yeah. Clinton had
hopefully he knows the difference between representation and statehood. And if he doesn't, we need to inform him. And he did say publicly, initially he was asked on Meet the Press whether he supported statehood, and his answer was whatever is good for the residents of D.C. He was followed up a couple of weeks later. I guess the Republican Party tapped him on the shoulder, and he said, no, I do not support statehood for D.C. So I don't think he knew what it was.
I've seen quotes that says he has no position, but he doesn't see that it's likely.
Well, and you know what? I don't want to be – this is a partisan battle between Republicans and Democrats. There's no doubt about that. And I don't want to be sanctimonious about it. I've been a Democrat my whole life. And if every elected official was a Republican in the District of Columbia, Democrats might very well react the same way the Republicans have. This is not, you know, but we need to find a way beyond the partisan rancor. But it definitely is a partisan fight. And let me just say another thing while we're on the subject. This week in Chicago, just yesterday, they stripped the superdelegates of their power inside the Democratic Party. I am a superdelegate. I've been a superdelegate the last three conventions. It's not going to help the statehood battle. It's going to hurt us a little bit in statehood.
Michael, how does that work? How does that
work?
What does it mean now? What did it mean and what does it mean now? Please.
What it meant was that superdelegates, and there were many of them. I forget how many superdelegates there were. Several hundred. And they could vote any way they wanted to. Now, a regular delegate goes as a delegate for a candidate. So if you run and you're a Bush delegate and you come to the convention, you got to vote for George Bush on the first ballot, or in a Democratic, let's use Democrats. If you're a Hillary Clinton delegate, you have to vote for Hillary Clinton on the first ballot. Superdelegates can vote for whoever they want. So in the last couple of elections, they've been really powerful, in especially in Hillary Clinton's election, because they came over to Clinton before she had clinched the nomination, and they gave her the nomination. And so the Sanders people were people that led this fight, I believe, and they said that that was unfair, and it's not what the superdelegates were meant to do. And you know what? I was at the DNC when they created the superdelegates, and they have a real point. The superdelegates were really meant to be a fail-safe. They weren't meant to make the decision. They were meant to keep the party from making a bad decision. So what they've done is they've said now that superdelegates can't vote on the first ballot. So if you're deadlocked on the first ballot, then the superdelegates can come in and they may make a difference. They probably would make a difference. And that's really what the intention up front was, I believe. So they've changed
that.
So
you'll be able to vote with your conscience, but not on round one.
Not on round one. Round one goes with the people, what the people in the Democratic Party have chosen. And that's probably the way that is the way it should be. Let's be honest. I'm personally upset because it's taken some power away from me, because we got Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama both to say that they were for statehood before we would give them our superdelegate votes. And that doesn't mean that they wouldn't have said it otherwise. In fact, the day that Barack Obama said it to me, he also said it to Eunice Jenkins. So it may not just be about, you remember that, right? Eunice said American University.
I'll never forget it, because he never followed through. He did not, I have to say, he never followed through on that.
But it does take a little power away from us. Some African-American legislators have complained because it takes power away from them as well. But I think it was the right decision, unfortunately. I wish, of course, I want to be the big guy, I want to be important, but.
Well, you're still a superdelegate. They didn't strip you of it. I thought they relegated everybody to just the same status. They've just taken away what you can do.
Come on, Maria, you know better than that, We go. It's all about status at the convention, right? how many passes you have, how many buttons you have, how many parties you're invited to. I'll never forget. I got to tell you a story quickly.
And then we have Catherine on the line. We have two other callers.
All right. Well, let's get Catherine on the line. We'll tell the story later.
Okay.
Catherine, what's up?
Well, I want to know, how long has your organization been in operation?
And I've been the senator for the District of Columbia for 12 years, if that's what you're asking.
No, I'm talking about Eunice Jenkins' organization.
Oh, they've been in
1997, right?
We were founded in 97.
And we just celebrated our 20th anniversary November of last year, of 2017. So we're going into our 21st year, yes.
Oh, wonderful, yes. If someone wants to donate to your organization, how would they do that? Are you a 501c?
Yes, we are a nonprofit. You would go to our website, freedc.org, and you can go on and you'll see a big red button that says donate. And you can click on that button and donate, or you could see our address on the website. As Senator Brown said, we have a great webmaster, and our website is donation-friendly. Yes, indeed. Thank you for asking.
And Catherine, may I ask, how is it that this is important to you?
Well, it's important that we become a state.
Yes.
Okay. Then you're listening to the right program.
Yeah, thanks, Catherine. And you can't make
a better...
We have
all the rights and privileges of a state.
And you can't make a better donation than to make a donation to Anise Jenkins' organization, because they really are grassroots. They really use every dime they get efficiently, and they really do make a difference. So as much as we'd like you to come see Dick Gregory as well, you or the show, rather, we want you to give money to Anise. She's a great person, and it's a great organization. Thanks for calling in.
Okay.
Do we have Bonnie on the line? Bonnie, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
We're getting a lot of callers. What's up, Bonnie?
Well, I'm curious. You're obviously talking about statehood, since that's what your program is about. But you had mentioned that we have 195 votes to make the district statehood. And I'm curious about Puerto Rico, that they also have gotten representatives to sign up for that. And it seems that Congress is more interested in making Puerto Rico a state than it is making the District of Columbia a state.
Well, you know, on a certain level, you might be right, Bonnie. They have less co-sponsors than we do, a lot less. Of course, their bill's much newer. But they do have 10 Republicans, and we don't have any Republicans. So surely the Republicans in Congress are more interested in making the Puerto Rico estate. And, you know, we've been up on Capitol Hill lobbying. I've met with five offices of the people that are on the Puerto Rico bill as Republicans, trying to get them to support the D.C. statehood bill with Democrats on it, because we're saying to them, you know, it's great that Puerto Rico wants to become a state. They've been around for 100 years. They've been American citizens for over 100 years. So, you know, let's do it. But let's also include the District of Columbia when we're doing that. And just so you know, we've also met with the Puerto Rican delegation. They have a shadow delegation just like our delegation. There's more members. There's 7 of them. And we've met with them, and we're trying to coordinate with them.
Senator Brown, could you tell us what states they were, the Republican states? So maybe some constituents are listening and they'll call in and say they support it. They support statehood.
Why can't you're quizzing me, and I really don't know.
Oh, I don't mean to do that.
But no. Alaska.
I'm glad you did. I'm glad you did that.
I know some of them, of course, because we've met with them. Alaska was one, and we met with Alaska, and Don Young said he would consider it. Wisconsin, we met with Wisconsin, and their representative said no. We've met with in Virginia with Representative Scott, and his people are also interested. So Alaska and Virginia, if you live in either one of those states, please call Don Young, call Representative Scott, push them, because they're both considering it. I'm sorry that I don't know all the other states off the top of my head. But on the next show, we'll list them, because that's a good point.
So unfortunately, because the position is partisan, there would be fallout for a Republican entity to do so unless they said this isn't partisan. This is about right and wrong. And if you could steer the conversation to something that is less political and more ethical, I think that's where you would get traction.
Well, that's what we're trying to do, Maria. And we've actually said to the members that we've talked to, it's going to take a brave Republican. We say that every time. Yeah. It's going to take a brave Republican to be the first Republican, right? To be the first, the first person out there supports this on the Republican side. And that's another reason we need more resources in this, because we need to put pressure on them. We need to stand up in front of people who are making this a partisan battle. We need to stand up veterans from the District of Columbia and say, these people have put their lives on the line for you, and they ought to have the same rights as every other American. And then see if they're brave enough to stand up and say no. I don't think they will be. I think they'll say, yes, you're right. And so you're right. We have to change this from
the narrative has to be different. Yeah. And I do believe that then you will appeal to people's right and wrong side of them instead of their R or D side of them. Because if you really break it, that's why I think, and it's one of the things that I've also noticed as being a participant in this conversation, is it seems that it's got the attention of the younger voters, the 20 and the 30-year-olds. And I think they can help change the narrative, because they probably don't understand what the heck, what in this day and age.
What's going on. That's right.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right.
And you know, we're planning a rap contest in D.C. to have a rap concert for young people to enter using statehood as their theme. And we think that we can. But I think it will make a difference. They're going to win prizes if they are judged to have the best rap song about statehood. We're going to try to get it out through social media and really get people involved and young people involved, because they are inspired. You know, we had a civil rights movement back in the 60s, and this is really a great subject to continue and to revive a civil rights discussion. Because it is about basic rights. That's all it is.
That's not asking for anything extra. Ethical conversation, or even better, what you've just said, Anise, it's about civics and civil rights.
Yeah.
It's not about partisanship. I don't understand why it got political.
Well, and you know what? If you think about all the songs that came out of the civil rights movement, and I mean not just songs, you know, we know the great kind of spiritual songs that came out of the black community, like a Change Is Gonna Come and Wade by the Water and you know all those great spiritual songs, but also folk songs, Bob Dylan, Joan Baez, the Kingston Trio, all, you know, and rock songs as well, the Rolling Stones and the Beatles, you know, there was a lot of socially relevant music in the 1960s and 70s, which helped propel not only the civil rights movement, but the anti-war movement. And so music's an important part. That's one of the reasons we're doing the Dick Gregory thing.
We can't forget Respect by Aretha Franklin. I mean,
Respect,
she did not write it, but
that's
what she was singing about. Her father was a civil rights leader. Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. And
Anise, since you mentioned this, do you have the date scheduled for this event?
No, we don't have the date scheduled, but I'm hoping Senator Brown will let us call in and announce the date.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Nice. And you'll post it on your website, of course.
Yes, it'll be on our website. Yeah.
Yeah. I think
that's
a great idea.
And we'll want the winners on the show, too. We'll want to hear this stuff on the show, right?
Yes.
And we get them on the show. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, and we do need to engage young people. And you're right, Maria. It's hard to get beyond the partisan rancor, but that's really what we need to do. And we're trying, you know. When I testified before the United States Senate, for example, I brought an American flag with 51 stars to every member on the committee, and I delivered them the day of the hearing along with veterans. And, you know, and that's what we were trying to say to them. We said, look, the guy that wrote the Star Spangled Banner was an American soldier who lived in the District of Columbia and was part of the District of Columbia militia. The man that wrote TAPS was a Congressional Medal of Honor recipient from the District of Columbia. So every time the flag goes up and the flag comes down, there's somebody from the District of Columbia that's involved. But when it flies overhead, we're completely forgotten. And that's what we wanted to say to them. We wanted to say, this is about America. It's not about Democrat or Republican. It's about our basic civil rights. You know, they said Hawaii would never elect a Democrat and Alaska would never elect a Republican. And look today, you know,
yes.
Got one Democrat in Alaska, and I don't think you have any Republicans in Hawaii elected. So things change.
I think the Republican Party should consider the fact that they might have some potential representation, too, if they vote for statehood. It's nothing to exclude that from happening. We were actually, when Puerto Rico had their referendum, we did go to some Republican offices, and we asked two questions. We asked them, did they support Puerto Rico becoming a state? And they said yes. And without exception, we said, well, are you going to co-sign the D.C. statehood bill? And they said no. And what was the reason? What was the reason? Just because D.C. has been a Democratic state. Well, that can change. It doesn't.
Right.
I know you don't want to hear that, Senator Brown, but that does not
happen. Just as long as it doesn't change before November.
But you make a very good point, Anise, about that. Because, yeah, things change. I just think that if people would understand that the question isn't partisan, that it is about basic human rights, that then takes the Republican and Democrat out of the equation. And then it's just like, well, let's look at the facts. Let's look at what's happened. Let's look what continues to happen. Let's look what they can and cannot do. How is that fair? How is that right?
Well, and you know what? The people do understand that, Maria, but the politicians don't. And you know, the survey that was done nationwide shows that 80% of America agrees that we should have the same representation they do. And 80% of America doesn't agree on a lot. So most Americans agree to that. But it's become so acceptable to be partisan in Washington that the politicians don't respond. And we need to, that's why we need to get out there and get their own constituents to put pressure on them, because, you know, otherwise I don't think we're going to be able to move them unless they hear from their own people that they want this done. And, you know, this is a problem that we have in the statehood movement. It doesn't affect anybody really that besides the people of Washington, D.C. You know, during the civil rights movement, when they turned fire hoses on people in the South, everybody felt that pain. You know, African-Americans all across America felt that pain. But it's hard to make people feel our pain because they don't experience it. People in California have equal rights, although the people in California seem to be behind us.
It's another state.
You know?
They're more progressive. That's what it is. And that's, you know, the too liberal, too progressive. We shouldn't be judged on the positions that we're taking, but we are. We are judged on positions that we take on issues. People should know that D.C. at one time had an epidemic HIV/AIDS rate. We were prevented by Congress from spending our own local funds on clean needle exchange. Well, once we broke that and once we got through it, and we could spend our own money, the HIV/AIDS rate plummeted in D.C. That's life or death. But like you say, everybody's not experiencing that. But it was life or death in D.C.
Yeah,
it's not
absolutely.
Just about can you vote.
Right. It certainly is. And, you know, and I believe what Dr. King said, that injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. And it is, you know. I remember, I don't want to digress too much here, but I was involved in a couple of crimes when I lived on Capitol Hill. Both of them resulted in arrest. And I had a police officer say to me, look, you're really an engaged citizen. And I said, well, that's the way I was raised. That's what my grandmother, I grew up in a bad neighborhood, and that's what our grandmother taught us. And he said, well, your grandmother was really civic-minded. And I said, no, she wasn't civic-minded. She taught us that you stop the robber next door, because if you don't, next week he comes back to rob you. And I think this is an important thing to understand. We can't allow these injustices to exist anywhere, because they really do affect all of us. They affect the national political scene as much sometimes as locally. Imagine what two Democratic votes in the Senate would have done over the past couple of years with so many important close votes. The two liberal Democrats would have made a difference. So if you're a liberal and you live in Wisconsin or California or Minnesota, you have a vested interest in this, I believe.
But
the Republican Party has changed, because my father, a black man, was a Republican. And he wasn't extremely conservative. He didn't carry all of that baggage. But he was a Republican. The Republican Party was more widespread, it was more flexible, and something has happened where it's changed its definition. It really has.
Well, and that's an even more important point, Anise, is that the Republicans hurt themselves because of that. And that's one of the things where we have had some Republican support, because Dr. Martin Luther King was a Republican.
Yes,
a lot of people forget
father.
That.
Well, what I identify with what you said, Anise, as a registered Republican, is that because I'm socially ridiculously liberal, I don't align with any of the pro-life and the right-wing Christian, which is what I believe gives the party a bad name. In fact, I circulated a petition on MoveOn.org to have the abortion taken out of the Republican Party platform. It got nowhere, no traction,
wow.
No notice, no nothing, because as a Catholic, I believe that it's killing, but it's not my place to tell any woman what
right.
she does with her body.
That's right.
So
that's
morally,
right.
I have an opinion about it, but it's not my place to put my morals on anybody else. So that's
right.
why I believe it should still be legal and available. So the fact that the party keeps clinging to that, unlike the Democrats who got rid of the death penalty, which was in their party platform, that opened up, I think, your party more than anything else. And I believe that that would help with the Republican Party, too. But they seem to want to dig their feet in and hang their hat on that one issue. And that is really terrible as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. And,
well,
you know,
you.
That makes a very important point that we really the only thing, there's only one constant in the universe. There's only one thing that's always found in everything, everywhere, without one exception, and that is change. And
correct.
If you're not willing to change,
correct.
then you've got a problem. Well, we've run out of time. And thanks, Anise Jenkins, for being on our
thank
show
you.
Again. I
thank
you
for
you
inviting
guys
me. Thank you, Maria.
Anise, yeah. I can't thank you enough for being such an inspiration and walking the walk and continuing to put your money in your mouth where you have your passion, because more people should do what you do with what you care about. It's really amazing to me.
Well, I appreciate that, and it might be OCD, but that's okay.
No, it's not. It's OCD is right, because you're the one person that cares about the district. So,
no.
You know, Anise,
thank
you'll
you,
be
Senator
back
Brown,
again, I'm
for
sure.
You sticking with this unpaid, as an unpaid senator, whoever heard of such a thing. But thank you for sticking with us all.
That's true, too. Yes. Thank you, Senator Brown.
Okay. Well, thank you, guys. And we're going to leave you tonight. I was going to leave you with a great civil rights song in honor of Anise Jenkins, but we bumped that for a song in honor of Senator McCain and his family. Our condolences go out to all of them, his friends, his colleagues. And here's, I don't know what music that the senator liked, but I'm sure he would have liked this song. Here's Lee Greenwood with God Bless the USA. Thank you.
Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.